Good morning, everyone. So, as I often do when I'm trying to pick something to speak about, is I'll look to what the daily readings happen to be on the Sunday that I'm exhorting. And what often happens is it's a little out of context, so I usually have to back up a few chapters to kind of figure out what's going on. And I usually find something in those previous few chapters that I'd like to talk about rather than what happened to be on the Sunday. So, as I was reading and looking through things, and I got to Ezekiel, I think today's reading happened to be Ezekiel 45, and I was reading it and was trying to figure out exactly what was going on, because it was, you know, somebody, he was being shown, you know, what the city was supposed to look like and stuff like that, and I was trying to figure out what was happening. So I backed up and backed up until I got to Ezekiel 40, which is kind of where the vision happened to start. And as I was reading that, it kind of brought my mind back to a class that I'd been taking in college, which was an interpersonal communication class. And one of the exercises that we did was on how well people listen to each other. And so we got split up into groups of five. And, you know, whoever happened to go first, all five of them went outside the room and kind of sat there. And one person had to come inside, and the teacher told them a story for about, usually like a 3 to 5 minute story. And the person who came in and heard that story had to then turn around and repeat word for word to the next team member the story they just heard. And as you can imagine, this is kind of like basically a game of telephone, but a bit bigger. And so when it came around to my group's turn, I ended up being volunteered to hear the first story for some reason. So I sat down and the teacher started telling me the story, and I was trying really hard to remember and pay attention to that story. And when the next person came in, I actually was able to say word for word the entire story. And the teacher was shocked, and everybody in the room was like, "Whoa, you just did that? How'd you do that?" And I was like, "I don't know, I just concentrated." But the story that I told started off talking about a farm and all the kinds of animals and how many animals and how big the farm was. And at the end of the story, it came down to the guy who owned the farm was only 5'2", and he wanted to marry a girl who was 6'3", and he couldn't marry her because he was too short, and that's the tall and short of it. And that was kind of like the punchline. So as it went through my teammates, the final version of the story was there's a tall boy or a short boy and a tall girl. And so that 5 minute piece was less than a sentence. And that's kind of how much people could hear and listen from each other and repeat back and remember. And I thought that was very interesting. Many prophets have been asked by God to play telephone to the people of Israel. In Ezekiel 40, when I was reading that, it was like, wow, this is pretty amazing. So I'll read real quick in Ezekiel 40. In the 25th year of our captivity, at the beginning of the year, on the 10th day of the month, in the 14th year after the city was captured, on the very same day the hand of the Lord was upon me, and he took me there. In the visions of God, he took me into the land of Israel and set me on a very high mountain. On it toward the south was something like the structure of a city. He took me there, and behold, there was a man whose appearance was like the appearance of bronze. He had a line of flax and a measuring rod in his hand, and he stood in the gateway. And the man said to me, "Son of man, look with your eyes and hear with your ears, and fix your mind on everything I show you. For you were brought here so that I might show them to you. Declare to the house of Israel everything you see." Now, if you just scan through the rest of Ezekiel, there are 8 long chapters of numbers and measurements and all sorts of details about what that city was supposed to look like. And the job was declare everything you see to the people of Israel. That was a lot of information. Architects, when they're building and designing houses, have stacks and stacks and piles of paper and plans that they have to draw out to be able to remember all the details that they need to build something. And when I was kind of reading through and skimming through Ezekiel, it didn't sound like he had a clipboard and was writing down what he saw. And I don't think he asked and said, wait, what was that measurement again? He didn't. And that's a very amazing thing. God chooses people whose minds are so fixed on God and so fixed on what he asked them to do that they can actually take in that information and are then able to give it back to who God's need, to whoever God needs that information to go to. Another example of people whose minds were really solidly fixed on God was in 2 Chronicles 5. Second Chronicles 5 is sort of the start of the dedication ceremony of the temple that Solomon built. And that temple must have been quite a sight to see. And just with all the planning and all the things that have been going into building, getting that temple ready, all of the priests and all of the Levites and all the people who worked in the temple must have been fully concentrating on getting that temple ready, on, you know, getting it ready for the Lord, focused. Their minds were fixed on what they needed to do for God. And in verse 13, as I was reading, I can almost imagine, you know, the excitement of the priests as they come out. And they come out and are singing at, you know, the ceremony. And it says, indeed, it came to pass when the trumpeters and singers were as one to make one sound to be heard in praising and thanking the Lord. And when they lifted up their voice with the trumpets and cymbals and instruments of music and praised the Lord, saying, for he is good, for his mercy endures forever, that the house of the Lord was filled with a cloud, so that the priests could not continue ministering because of the cloud, for the glory of the Lord had filled the house. I mean, can you just imagine, you know, however long it took to build the temple, I don't quite remember, I'm sure it was at least a couple years, you know, just preparing and all for that moment. When it finally came, their singing just came together, and God showed himself in a cloud right where they were, you know, and their minds had been so fixed that that was all that was in their heart. That was what they were there for. It's a very powerful thing. Now, what happens after that is Solomon goes on to give the prayer, and sort of like the opening speech, I guess, for the ceremony. And as I was reading through this, my mind brought me back to another time when I was in school. This was back in high school. And it was in an English class, and we happened to be reading one of Shakespeare's plays. I don't quite remember which one it was. But we were kind of splitting up into parts, and people were reading certain characters and lines. And not very many people like to read out loud, so I ended up getting a part of the king. And I ended up having a nice 3 or 4 page line that I had to read. And as I started reading it, I started kind of getting caught up in what I was reading. And sort of the emotions started coming out in what I was reading. I think I even got a little bit of a British accent in there too. But when I finished, I noticed that the room was silent and whoever had the next line wasn't reading their line. So I kind of looked up and the whole class was looking at me like, whoa, and they started clapping and I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I'll keep reading, whatever. But it kind of was a little bit of an eye-opener for me in that when you're reading something, especially in the Bible, especially if it's a prayer, if it's somebody, you know, sort of being, you know, giving, saying something that's from the heart, it's a very powerful tool to really try to read and understand the feelings that they have behind what they're saying. So your homework this week is to read 2 Chronicles 6 over and over and over again until when you read it, you hear and you feel what Solomon was feeling when he said that prayer. His prayer was from the Spirit. His mind, like the priests, had been fixed on doing God's work and on God for the whole process of building that temple. And then right there at that moment, you know, he was on his knees in front of the whole nation of Israel, praying and pouring his heart out to God. And as he finishes his prayer, right when he finishes it, in chapter 7, It says, "Now when Solomon had finished praying, fire came down from heaven and consumed the sacrifices that were on the altar." Now, that's amazing. You know, I mean, if you're, when you're reading it, just think about that. Try to picture yourself as one of the Israelites sitting there, seeing your new king on his knees, praying and pouring his heart out to God for you and for the people. And then God sends fire out of the sky and just consumes the sacrifice that was on the altar. And, you know, if Solomon hadn't been fixed on God and hadn't put his whole spirit and, you know, everything he had into, you know, getting that temple ready and into that prayer, God might not have been so keen to have dropped fire for everyone to see. Another example, the best example, the last one that I have for us, is of Christ. And Christ is pretty much the best example of somebody who fixed their mind on God and on what God wants for us. And so what I was looking at, instead of looking at John 11, I backed up a little bit to John 4. And Jesus has a very simple, quick conversation with a woman at a well. So I'll read a little bit of that for you here. "For his disciples had gone away into the city to buy food. Then the woman of Samaria said to him, 'How is it that you, being a Jew, ask a drink from me, a Samaritan woman? For Jews have no dealings with Samaritans.' Jesus answered and said to her, 'If you knew the gift of God and who it was who says to you, "Give me a drink," you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water.' The woman said to him, 'Sir, you have nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. Where then do you get that living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us the well and drank from it himself, as well as his sons and his livestock?' Jesus answered and said to her, 'Whoever drinks of this water will thirst again, but whoever drinks of the water that I shall give him will never thirst. But the water that I shall give him will become in him a fountain of water springing up into everlasting life.' The woman said to him, 'Sir, give me this water that I may not thirst and not come here to draw.' Jesus said to her, 'Go call your husband and come here.' The woman answered and said, 'I have no husband.' Jesus said to her, 'You have said well, I have no husband, for you have had five husbands, and the one whom you now have is not your husband, and that you spoke truly.' The woman said to him, 'Sir, I perceive that you are a prophet. Our fathers worshipped on this mountain, and you Jews say that in Jerusalem is a place to worship.' Jesus said to her, 'Woman, believe me, the hour is coming when you will neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem worship the Father. You worship what you do not know. We know what we worship, for salvation is of the Jews. But the hour is coming, and is now, when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and truth, for the Father is seeking such to worship him. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and truth.'" Now, that whole conversation, just if it happened that quickly, took maybe 2 minutes. And Jesus went from asking for a glass of water to not getting a glass of water to preaching. Just from a simple question of, "Can I have a glass of water?" If his mind hadn't been focused and fixed on God, he might have just said, "Get me some water. Come on, hurry up. I'm thirsty." Rather than using that as an opportunity to preach. When the disciples came back, the disciples came back and the woman left and left her jug of water. I don't know if she even actually got any water out. She probably got distracted when Christ was talking to her and got engaged in that and just didn't finish getting water out and ran off. So the disciples show up and say, "You know, here, we brought you some food." And what does he say? "I have food to eat of which you do not know." And of course, the disciples are like, "What? What's he talking about? I didn't give him food. Did you give him food?" "No, we didn't give him food." And Jesus says, "My food is to do the will of him who sent me and to finish his work." Talking to that woman about his Father fed his spirit, which was far greater food for him than any food the disciples could have brought him to eat. And if, because his mind was so fixed on God and his whole spirit was in what he was, in his work that he was doing, he didn't need food. He was so energized by his chat with this woman that took 2 or 3 minutes that he didn't need to eat. He was satisfied. My food is to do the will of him who sent me and finish his work. So, look with your eyes and hear with your ears and fix your mind on everything the Lord shows you and make doing the Lord's work your food.